And it is time for the AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast, a pro wrestling podcast where we talk about pro wrestling. And on Thursdays, we specifically talk about AEW Dynamite the previous nights. Hello, welcome. Whether you are on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on your favorite podcast app, it's a pleasure to be able to regale you with my thoughts and analyses in regards to AEW Dynamite. Leave likes, subscriptions, reviews, five-star reviews, five-star ratings, all that good stuff. But as you can tell, probably out the gate, I am much more calm, zen this week as opposed to last week, where I essentially did an instant reaction to, which I still maintain is the worst Dynamite of all time. I feel much more at peace with it. I've, said everything I had to say about it, and now I think it's time to move on. Now, that being said, maybe this is a spoiler alert. Maybe this is a trigger warning. I don't know how to call it, but we are going to be talking about the ongoing influences of sports entertainment in our AEW Dynamite productions. We're not done talking about it because they were very prevalent again last night, despite the fact that it was a show that I liked, that I didn't love. I thought it was a very good show. It wasn't like, head over heels over it, but, I wanted wrestling. I got myself some wrestling. I got myself some tremendous matches. I got a lot of nonsense on top of that as well. For those of us who were expecting this to be the reset episode after last week, we were a little disappointed. I knew that we weren't going to get like a complete 180 on everything that's been happening. No, there's stuff that's too ingrained right now to just, kill and move on. There's a lot of support for a lot of the things that really irk me on the show. So those are still going to happen moving forward. But there is a lot of shit. There's still a lot of shit that happened last night that I'm completely disinterested in, right? And we'll talk about that. We're gonna power our way to it, but overall I thought this was nonetheless a tremendous show as far as wrestling goes. But there's still things here where I'm like, man, some weird decisions. It's I'm sorry to say to anyone who really doesn't want to hear it, but this is not the same company as it was when it started. It really isn't. It's a completely different place. And I'm sorry to say. It doesn't have the same vision. It doesn't have the same feel. Things that they said that they wouldn't do, they're doing. The emphasis on, making stuff feel important, titles, rankings. I know a lot of people got bent over backwards when it comes to rankings, but the rankings kept the booking honest, as opposed to falling into lazy traps. I'm sure you all see where I'm coming from. I'm sure you all already see, I should say, obliquely, what I'm referencing right now. Might as well just go to it. Instead of trying to make this, this preamble of a lot of vague thoughts. But just so in case you're the kind of, you're the type of listener who's going to get triggered at the idea that I'm not going to sit here and praise last night's Dynamite and be like, yeah, this was fantastic. What a great reset. And so on. This is not the case. There will be quibbles. So, unless you want to, if you're the type of person who's gonna be annoyed by that, might as well turn off right now and head on over to WrestleJoy. I'm sure they enjoyed it. I'm sure they'll be able, just nothing but great things to say. Here, we're gonna take a little more nuanced approach. We're going to start by talking about the attendance for last night's Dynamite. I'm recording this on the Thursday, November 9, as I usually do. On a Thursday, not on November 9, is what I'm trying to say. So we're talking about the November 8 edition from Portland, Oregon, the Moda Center. 4,413 tickets distributed as per the most recent update by WrestleTix. I guess it might change a bit. They had set up for 5,340. Look, let's just start with this. People going, hey, this is pretty good. It's good for Dynamites, but this is not pretty good. You know, the weird backpacking. I've done my warm-up exercises. The weird backpacking when it comes to AEW from the Freakazoids, let's be honest. Like, oh, look at that, 4,400. That's good. They went over 4,000. They had set up for 5,000. Hey, maybe they'll make it to 5,000 with the walk-ins. Good job. It's such weird commentary. This is a basketball arena, right? This is a basketball arena, 19,000 seats. We're filling up a fifth of the building. Why are we saying this is good? Why are we going, hey, nice job. Look, and this is my constant discussion every time we talk about the attendance. This is good for Dynamite standards. I agree, this is above average. I think we're starting to see, week after week, we're seeing a bit of a trend line. But let's not be daft here and applaud and say, hey, high five, great job, local promotion. These are not good ticket sales. If you're not even filling up a fifth, if you're filling up a fifth of the building. It's not good. And there's no rationale around it that will make it good. There's improvements in their overall attendance, but attendance for AEW shows, say it with me, still stink. Because the product is not hot. I wish we would keep our congratulations and our excitement for real good news. Because if you're excited for everything, then when the real moments come, when the real times arrive where you do have true to form successes, they just go by the wayside and they're just mishmashed with everything else. Not everything needs to be risen on a pedestal. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's start with the show, which starts with the cold open again. It's like last week. Another cold open where Tony Schiavone's there with MJF. And, you know, he's talking about getting pinned by Jay White last week. And now he takes a call from Adam Cole. And he puts him on screen, right? Again, we're doing the call-in stuff. And blah, blah, blah. Samoa Joe's a partner for Full Gear. And then Dan Garcia arrives and they get fiery for the match. You know, for what it's worth, I like this part. And then Roderick Strong arrives with the Kingdom, yada, 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 Adam and all that. And then, you know, MJF leaves and Adam Cole logs off and Roderick Strong says he's going to remind people who he is starting tonight, takes off his glasses. Look at all this shit that happened in this one segment. And honestly, all they had to do was promote one match. They had one match to promote tonight, which was MJF and Dan Garcia. A match that a lot of us were really excited about and that, you know, Daniel Garcia and others were sort of pointing at this as a reset, as, you know, let's go with the people who put their heart and soul into it. Guys who are maybe set aside a little bit. Dan Garcia's fighting for us. Well, Max put the kibosh on that. But quite frankly, this is very much... I don't know how you can't see the sports entertaining parts of this, because this is all what it is. And in rapid fire, like Crash TV, Attitude Era stuff, where you're going from one thing to one thing to one thing. You're like, wow. No focus. Too many things going on at once. And it leads us into the match. To start things off, AEW World title match. MJF defeated Dan Garcia. I thought it was a good match, but I also felt that they were about to kick it into second gear. Just as the match was coming to a close, I thought that they were going to that we were about to rev up the engines, move it into another gear, but no, the match ended. I was like, oh, all right. And I mean, you know, I know MJF feels like he has to do a lot of this to get himself over, right? To stay over. I understand. When I say he has to do a lot of this, I mean the skits, the in-ring goofiness, the sing-along with the promos and all that. Like, I know he feels he has to. And I know he wants to do it because, you know, he's one of us. He's a tape nerd. He knows his history. He loves pro wrestling. So this is the kind of stuff he wants to do. And I understand all of that. But when I look at him open up the match with Garcia, and I see him transitioning in and out of moves and how smooth he is this entire match. And thinking about all of the other great matches that MJF has had, because he has great matches. I sometimes wonder if he tries too hard with the personality stuff, because it's not as... Look, he's not like Hogan. He's not like Dwayne Johnson, where he has to lean into his charisma, his natural abilities of... his natural presentation abilities to get himself over, because... He's got the work. He doesn't have anything to mask by doing sing-along moments or, you know, being a charisma bomb, you know? Just like not in the sense that it destroys everything, but that he could, you know, just like he drops it and just like, oh, wow, everyone is attracted to what he has to say and so on and so forth. Like, he doesn't have to go that far because he has nothing to mask. He has the work to back it up. You know, he's arguably had a couple of match of the year candidates this year. I know there's tons of people who are very, very, very low on MJF right now. I'm not. Because what matters most in pro wrestling, folks, and this might come as a revelation to some, it's the in-ring. It's what you do from bell, to use the whole, you know, the tired gimmick. But nonetheless, it's when you take what's happening inside the ring during the entirety of the match. That's what matters. And Max can do it. He's got it. I like MJF matches. He isn't even relying anymore on that much shtick as he did just a couple of months ago. You know what matches I'm talking about. You know what kind of stuff I'm talking... You know... It's not that... Look, they're not shenanigans free. But I enjoy the sportsmanship gimmick, where he extends his hand, sportsmanship, and then pokes the guy in the eye. It works. I like it. There's other things he gets really heavy-handed on sometimes. I'm like, okay, no, this is nonsense. I don't need to see this. I don't want to see this. Because it's below him. You know, and I deeply, sincerely believe that MJF takes criticism to heart. And I'm, you know, we're talking criticism. We're not talking like outright hatred. But I do think he takes criticism to heart. Because I've noticed multiple little changes, little tweaks, adjustments in a lot of what he does in ring since a lot of us started going a little harder on him. And some of us really harder on him. Because he relying too much on gimmickry and going too hard on nonsense is below him. He's that good. He doesn't need to go that hard. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here saying MJF should become, you know, never mind the personality, put on black trunks and little black boots and become a, you know, shoot style. No. That's, I don't want an MJF Josh Barnett match. Does that make sense? I don't want that. But you see, like, in this match here, you know, he does the eye poke with the sportsmanship thing, and he's not relying on shtick, he's wrestling. And that's all we really need. He's fantastic. I'm really excited for him to go back to being like the scumbag, not just our scumbag, like the scumbag, the dirtbag, the guy I wrote an article for defending him. Remember the what was it? Giving us stories like the car accident story. I'm like, this shit rules. It's fine. He's a heel. I can't believe he'd say that. He's a heel. He's supposed to say gross, stupid, asinine shit like this. He doesn't want to get... He wants you to hate him. Let him hate... Hate him. Embrace it. Now he's doing the babyface thing. And I think he's doing it well. Despite the fact that I think he tries too hard. But I think he's doing it quite well. But anywho. After the match, MJF wins with the salt of the earth. Again, like I said, a fine match, you know. I guess I was expecting more. And I guess it was built a little more, you know, with all these people turning to, you know, Dan Garcia was saying, I'm doing this for Ricky and for, I can't remember the litany of names. And he said this on Twitter. Well, MJF was like, yeah, well, you should have been doing it for me, pal. Kibosh. But after the match, MJF offers a handshake. But 2.0, who were there with Dan Garcia, they stand in the way. This don't shake this bastard's hand, despite the fact that Garcia wants to. And he wants to, Garcia right now, his character is conflicted. Am I still a sports entertainer? Or am I a pro wrestler? Kind of like AEW staring into the abyss right now. We get a tremendous promo by Mark Briscoe, hyping up his match with Jay White, complete with old footage of Jay White where you're like, Jesus, look at how far this guy's come. Tremendous promo. You don't need much. And I'm sold on the match. Mark Briscoe's tremendous. Darby Allin and Sting defeat the Outrunners. The match here was Darby eating shit for the majority of the match until Sting comes in and ends it all with a Scorpion Deathlock. That was it. No Edge Copeland on this one here. No Christian Cage. We get a contract signing. No one, no one told me that was going to happen. Are we purposefully keeping it away from Warren's attention? But it doesn't matter, really. It's not like in the ring. It's Tony who's in black and white with Timeless Tony Storm and Hikaru Shida, the champ. We got Japanese deathmatch legend, also Butler, Dr. Luther, in the background. They signed a contract. Look, I like the Tony Storm thing, or at least, hang on. I liked it to the degree where they didn't go completely too strong on it. I think it's a little too much, but it's not like it doesn't bother me. I feel I can tune that out very easily. And Tony Storm's a tremendous pro wrestler, and there's a lot of stuff that I can sort of shrug at, you know. I think I preferred it when it came across like she was in some sort of existential crisis instead of becoming this identity, right? I kind of liked it when she was depressed and, you know, the shoe and, you know, the first few weeks I thought were interesting, but then they turned it into a production. Then it became her identity and I'm like, well, all right, okay. But I'm saying this, I'm setting the table for this, that despite my reservations, I thought her promo was tremendous. The promo she cut was fantastic stuff. And, you know, she feels the character. It's very much in her wheelhouse. She's convincing. She's very good. I liked it. I liked her promo. As far as contract signings go, that's the least offensive one I've seen in a while. It's not like anything I'm going to be like, oh yeah, contract signings. You know, we're moving on to the match. Swerve Strickland defeated Penta El Zero Miedo. And listen, at this point, Dynamite is slow to pick up, right? Like I said, the MJF Garcia match was good little match, but it wasn't like anything that was sending me, as the kids say. I wasn't, wasn't on the edge of my seat. It wasn't this tremendous match. I thought it was okay, and I actually felt like they were about to hit another gear when the match ended. So I'm, left with a little distaste in my mouth. However, we try to get, we get through that and, the cold open and the Tony Storm stuff. And I'm like, all right, let's get into it. And now we got into it because this match ruled. This match had the second gear and the second gear that I needed Dynamite to get into. Tremendous stuff. Great action, violent, brutal. It all makes sense. You know, the spirit of Lucha Underground continues, lives on here. The guys are doing mirror offense on each other until they knock each other down. Springboard Destroyer on the apron by Pentagon. Fantastic. And does the arm snap, made in Japan, and then Swerve later on returns with favor by doing an arm snap of his own. This tremendous stuff. And such great, like, the fantastic thing about Swerve is that his psychology is down. Like, he knows how to convey what he's doing in the most Swerve Strickland way. And I thought this was a great match. I gave it 4 stars. I gave it 3.25 for MJF versus Dan Garcia. But this was a 4-star match. And ends with a... the Swerve Stomp. After the match, Swerve, as he promised, said he was going to unmask Penta, but Hangman Page shows up. He's got a chair, starts swinging it. They run up the ramp. He chair shots Swerve and, fights off security. And then he does a dead eye off the stage through a table. Look. They wanted to make this feud personal. It was about, it was a personal feud. And I already really liked Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland 1. We're getting in at 2. We gotta crank this up. If this is just a little taste of what we're going to get, that's what it's supposed to do, right? I'm stoked for this. This is a good feud. Look, was the home invasion angle successful? No, I thought it kind of stunk. I thought it was a lame home invasion. Just, you know, like, you know, when Seth Rollins invaded Edge's house, right? Adam Copeland's house. And the worst thing he did was, you know, drink orange juice out of the bottle from his fridge and maybe fart in a chair. Like, those are terrible home invasions. Kind of like, you know, what Swerve did. And I expected a little something a little more vile from Swerve than Seth freaking Rollins. You know what I mean? But that notwithstanding, you know, the intent is still there. And they want to make this personal and they want to make this brutal. Well, there we go. We have to start brutalizing it up. I thought that ruled. Great match. We get a good little Bullet Club Gold promo. Jay White keeping us on track with the Full Gear match, which is great. Then we had heard previously to Dynamite from previously to Dynamite airing that Sega of the video game Sega, right? That they were going to they had a sponsorship on Dynamite. I was like, oh. So it's about, and they do it, and it's a tie-in, basically, that they do with a video game package about the Like a Dragon series, which is, I think, I'm unfortunately not entirely caught up to date when it comes to AAA video games, but I believe this is the repackaging of Yakuza. The Yakuza games, in North America at the very least. Because they were called Yakuza here. From what I understand, the games were named Yakuza here, but not in Japan. Oh, jeez, I wonder why. So now they're dropping the Yakuza name here. They're calling it Like a Dragon, which is like an RPG or whatever the fuck. And Kenny Omega is in the game too. So we get Don Callis and Kenny Omega doing a promo battle, pre-taped promo battle over images of the game. It's all right. It's fine. Which then leads us to the Golden Jets being interviewed backstage by Renee Paquette. And, you know, Jericho talks and so on and so forth. And then the Young Bucks arrive. And this is where it gets spicy. This is where we get into it. The Young Bucks arrive and they start bitching. You know, it's like, oh, hey, you know, here's your friend. You know, what about the Elite? You know, you even came up with this nice little name, the Golden Jets, right? I bet Jericho came up with that, right? Jericho, who was a hanger-on. Don't forget, you know, who started this company, the Elite. You know, Jericho was there. Hey, I was there day one. And Matt Jackson's like, oh, no, yeah. You swooped in on day one to collect a paycheck, sure. You know, kind of thing. And, you know, Matt Jackson's being pissy. And I like pissy Matt Jackson. Pissy Matt Jackson is the best Matt Jackson. Couldn't give two tosses about, you know, babyface Matt Jackson, hey, all smiles. No. He has to be aggravated at someone or something. He has to just have, you know, something he wants to get off his chest or whatever. This was fun. And, you know, they're saying here, you know, Jericho basically says that the two of them, he and Omega, could beat the Bucks. So the Bucks are like, hey, you guys aren't booked for the pay-per-view. Neither are us. So why don't we do this then? Why don't we fight at the pay-per-view? And they added in some stipulations, whereas if the Bucks win, the Golden Jets must split. I'm like, who cares? Like, honestly, who cares? It's not as if, if you're doing this to a tag team that has history and has, you know, let's say you did this kind of angle with the New Day, for instance. And you're like, oh shit, you know, there's something going on here. But, you know, Jericho and Omega have been tag teaming for like 4 weeks. Like, who gives a shit? I don't care. But if the Golden Jets win, they get the number one shot at the tag team titles that the Bucks have. Okay. There's some stakes. It's fine. It's not just ego. Well, there, you know, it's a lot ego. But, you know, Omega here, I thought when it was his party, was very good. We're saying, you know, you think that I can't beat you, but I've beaten you before. This has happened before. I'm just going to do it again. I did it with Ibushi. I did it with Hanger. So if you wanted to do it all over again, we will. And maybe, he says, the Young Bucks will clean up their act and act like adults and not sissy, whiny, bitchy children. And Matt Jackson, in the meantime, is like, all right, I've heard this. I've heard this before. And Kenny Omega is like, yeah, I know you didn't, but you know, you had to hear it from someone like me. And it's either one of two things, right? It's either a Jim Cornette reference or it's a CM Punk reference. It's either or. You know, sissy, whiny, bitchy children sounds like something Cornette would say, but it also sounds vaguely like something CM Punk would say. And then everyone's like, okay, let's just cut this shit out, you know? Anyway, so we got another match for Full Gear set up here. I like this. This is all I really need to get me into matches. This works. Give me the Bucks, you know, wanting to be back on top of things, wanting to tear down the house, wanting to, you know, show off, be the greatest tag team in the world. Let's go. I'm fine with this. Ring of Honor World Television Championship had Samoa Joe successfully retain his title against Keith Lee. I thought this was another tremendous match. I thought this was tremendous. Probably the best that we've seen Keith Lee in a while. And Samoa Joe just tremendous. Big, strong meat match. Meat chants were aplenty. They wail into each other. They brawl on the floor. We get suplexes. Tremendous back and forth. Joe plays the hits. German suplex by Keith Lee. And Samoa Joe gets Lee to pass out to the Kikina Clutch. Despite his most valiant efforts to stay awake, he passes out. But the look, tremendous match. Before we get into the post, I want to make sure this is clear. I gave this 4 stars as well. I thought this was, I'm a simple man. Sometimes I just want two brutes just beating the hell out of each other. That's all I want. But now let's, of course, the story here is that after the match, Samoa Joe gets on the mic, says he's the greatest Ring of Honor World Television Champion of all time, but he didn't come here to just be TV champ. If, what does he say? If hunger defines the great, then consider me hungry or something like that. And he vacates the Ring of Honor TV title to the dismay of many, well, to the shock of everyone and to the dismay of many, and chalk me into the dismay column because I don't know what the plan here is as far as the world championship and Samoa Joe goes. But listen, there's a lot of people who say, oh, well, it's a good way to protect Joe. Protect him for what? For what? What are we protecting him for? When this is a guy who, you know, throughout this year, Samoa Joe has lost to MJF, to CM Punk, Darby Allin, and Wardlow. These are the losses he's taken. What are we protecting him? Samoa Joe has never felt protected. So why have this idea that, you know, having him drop the title is such a bad thing? Who did he beat? Glad you asked. Shout out to Chris Samza for helping me out on this one. Minoru Suzuki, Trent Barretta, Jay Lethal, Josh Woods, Brian Cage, Juice Robinson, Tony Deppen, Cheeseburger, Mark Briscoe, Colt Cabana, Christopher Daniels, Blake Christian, Matt Sydal, Dalton Castle, Shane Taylor, Willie Mack, Tony Nese, Rhett Titus, Keith Lee. Those are his World TV title defenses. Very good wrestlers, don't you know, on this list. There's a mix, but some very good wrestlers on this. Not exactly a who's who. And then when it's time to come up against the stars, the big guys, the MJS, the Darby Allins, the CM Punks, he can't do the job. He loses at Wembley. For instance, he loses to Wardlow. What are we protecting? That's the question I want to ask here. Because he doesn't feel protected. I don't want this big convoluted story into getting... Here's the thing. Here's something. Because this is an argument that was also put on to me. It's like, well, then you have to do this whole thing to get, you know, justify... To justify, you know, Samoa Joe dropping the title. I'm like, listen, you really don't. If you want to go like in pure like kayfabe rules or, you know, visions of titles, the television title is usually a stepping stone to your world title. It's a mid-card title that usually you would put on someone that you're warming up for a bigger spot. That was the case for the TV title in the old NWA and for a while in WCW. It's the case with the US title and the Intercontinental title, you know, in WWE. Although they're mismanaged sometimes, that is still the intent. You warm up a mid-card guy, strap a title on him so that you warm him up to get to the main belt. So I don't have any issues with Joe dropping the title and going, you know what? I was ready to move on anyway. It's time for me to move into the big leagues. Because that's how these titles work. That's one thing. The second point that we can make is also, you know, is you could create a story fairly easily. Put him in a triangle match, have him lose the title, be like, oh, I never lost the title. Have him, get distracted during the match by MJF, so that fires it up as well, you know? Like, it doesn't have to be a convoluted story. It can be straight out the gate. Straight out the gate, something very simple. Look at what we're doing here. When I talk about the influence of WWE in sports entertainment, we're racking our brains saying, no, we're not racking our brains, we're doing the opposite. We're saying, well, this was the best decision because we otherwise, man, imagine the story to try to justify this. You don't need a story. Because there's too many things that do make sense. The opposite that we're doing right now actually makes less sense. Him... retiring the title without elevating anyone else. Why couldn't we have put the title on Keith Lee last night then? What's Keith Lee doing that's so important? And that would have been a nice little jolt in the arm for Lee. Give him something to do. It would have raised his profile. Joe wouldn't have come across as anything worse. Joe was like, Samoa Joe could have cut a promo saying, you know what? It's fine. Time for me to move on anyway. I've been gunning for Max's title regardless. There you go. But we don't have rankings anymore. So this is the kind of shit that happens. It's just like, whoopsie doozy things happening right and left because there's no more vision. There's no more long-term vision as to what to do with your title holders anymore. The AEW of 2019, 2020 would not have let this happen. This feels slapdash. This feels lazy. I don't see any intrinsic value in Samoa Joe vacating the title. Losing it? Absolutely. And I don't think there's mental gymnastics to be made to get Samoa Joe set up as continuing to be perceived as a world title challenger. Because look, they're doing it with Wardlow too. I don't hear anyone going, Wardlow shouldn't be. Daniel Garcia out of nowhere decided to challenge MJF for the title. And now this is Samoa Joe would have needed to rack our brains, come up with, the story would have been too much to try and make sense out of this. The sense was all there. The sense would have been there if we still had rankings, if the title still had long-term plans, but they don't. They don't. There was a time you felt it. Now you really don't. It doesn't feel important. Doesn't feel special. So you've got Joe now. You know, clearly. And here's the thing. Joe has to beat Max now, right? This is the thing, right? And don't get me wrong. World champion Samoa Joe, I'm completely here for it. I think it's a tremendous choice. I love it. But he has to win now, right? Is that what we're doing? Is that what we're setting up for World's End? MJF Samoa Joe to start off 2024 with MJF losing the title to Samoa Joe, and then you have all the devil and the gimps all around taking everyone out? Is that what we're doing? I don't see the need to protect Samoa Joe when he hasn't been protected regardless. Like, this is 100% a WWE thing that we're seeing right now. This is 100% a WWE thing. Now, is this Tony Khan's way of thanking Samoa Joe for sticking up for him against CM Punk and in London? Maybe. Hey, and you know what? I don't have issues with that. I don't have any problems with that. But we just have to, as long as we're clear and we see what's happening instead of trying to make excuses for what's happening. This was not a good decision. The title was vacated. No one was elevated. Joe could have put someone over. It would not have hurt Samoa Joe because he hasn't been protected. And we buy into Joe as being a beast regardless because Samoa Joe comes in and he says, look, I want the title. And we're like, hell yeah, go for it, champ. You got it. You're credible. We believe it. So Joe has to win. Otherwise, what was all of this for? What was the title relinquishing for? And I don't mind Samoa Joe at the top. I think it's going to be a good, if it does happen, I think it's a good idea. Refreshing top tier matches. He's super credible to be in the top echelon. People will want to complain, oh, it's another former WWE guy. But here's the thing. As I've mentioned before on this very podcast, multiple times, for the past 20 years, there has only been one major national promotion. So most guys are going to be former WWE anyway. Just because if they wanted to make a decent living doing wrestling, they had to be hired by them. So I get it when people go, oh, it's another former WWE guy. I get it, but to a degree. It's not like what it was back in, you know, TNA or whatever. And they were like, yeah, you know, trying to give room for guys who hadn't been super pushed, and then they bring in Hogan and the rest. And you're like, well, okay. It's a little different on that. That doesn't bother me as much as this slapdash, uninspired, lazy booking in regards to the Ring of Honor title and Samoa Joe's world title aspirations. There's someone on that fucking roster could have benefited from a win on Samoa Joe. CM Punk got a win over Samoa Joe. Wardlow has. Darby Allin has. MJF has. Who cares? You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. He's not super protected. You know who's really protected on this roster right now? Jay White. Jay White is super protected. When MJF pins him, it's going to be a big deal. You know who else is super protected? John Moxley. And whenever John Moxley gets pinned, it's a huge deal. Samoa Joe, we see him lose often. That's fine. It's fine. You know who else is super protected? Orange Cassidy. And he's backstage with Hook, cutting a promo on John Moxley. Good little fiery promo. Cassidy really having developed this capacity to juggle between the unserious bit of his act and being perceived as a real professional wrestler, quote unquote. It's good stuff. The Guns defeated the Bollywood Boys in a literal squash. I like the Bollywood Boys. Man, these guys will never live out their... These guys will never overcome, I don't think, their association as Jinder Mahal's geeks, right? I think they will never outrun that... they'll never unrun that stigma, I don't think. They'll always be perceived as a couple of jokes, a couple of goofballs, when they are talented wrestlers. But this perception, I don't think they'll ever be able to shake it. You know, it's like a negative rub. It's like you get the Jinder Mahal rub and it does the opposite to your career, right? You know, Shota Umino gets the John Moxley rub from the G1 a couple of years ago, and it's propelling him in New Japan and in the in the minds of even North American fans. That rub is sustained and it's good and it's done wonders for his career and his perception, his public perception. Whereas the Bollywood Boys, it's the anti-rub. John Moxley and Wheeler Yuta cut a promo. Talking about whether or not HR is going to step in to save Orange Cassidy or whatnot. It's like, okay, are we just referencing the brawl out right and left now? Is that what we're doing here? Then we get back after this to Wardlow cutting a pre-tape promo about all his potential being wasted due to MJF or something. Julia Hart defeated Red Velvet, the returning Red Velvet. I thought this was a good little match. And I thought this was Red Velvet's one of her best, if not her best. I enjoyed it. I thought it was solid, well-worked. No one performed above their station. And I thought Red Velvet looked crisp. Thought she was in, you know, no sloppy moves. Julia knows her strengths. She knows her strengths too, Julia Hart. After the match, after Hart defeats Velvet, she puts her in the Heartless. And Sky Blue runs in. And Julia's looking her over for some reason. And then, you know, the friend squad arrives. Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander. I don't. And then Julia stands up to Chris Statlander, vice versa. This friendship stuff, I don't know. It's fine, I guess. Then we go back to RJ City, who is going to introduce us to AEW's newest signing, Mariah May, which had been rumored for this. It's probably the worst kept secret in pro wrestling. Mariah May, UK based wrestler, headed to stardom for a while to perfect her art, as we say. And legitimately did improve. I think on the when she was in the UK running the indies, I thought she was a mediocre wrestler. Whereas in Japan, I think she started to shine. She, you know, working the style over in stardom has really helped her blossom into a good old pro wrestler. I think she's got a lot more to offer now. Apparently she's a big fan of Toni Storm. And she marks out when RJ says that she can introduce Toni Storm to her. There had been rumors that they are going to make her like part of an entourage for Toni Storm. Look, there's a lot of people bemoaning this introduction. Oh, is this how you introduce her? Like, honestly, your first impression that you're leaving on wrestling fans, North American wrestling fans who knew nothing about you, is like, oh, she's a stalker. You know, I immediately thought of the Trish Stratus, Mickey James stalker angle from back in the day. Like, is this what we're doing here, or is it going to be something else? But like, it's a weird first impression. Then again, what do you do? Like, you don't bring in Mariah May and say, we signed international superstar Mariah. That's not what she is. You know, she's well known in a very niche part of pro wrestling. But other than that, there's a lot of people who are going to be discovering Mariah May for the first time. So maybe from that perspective, they could have done just about anything else. But do you bring her out with pomp and circumstance? Or like, you know, it's her grand debut on AEW. There's a part of me that says, this is adequate for the level of star power she brings. What would you have wanted her? What should AEW have done more here? If AEW did not, you know, debut Jay White with fireworks and circumstance and, you know, speeches and whatnot, like, you know, they just debuted him, threw him into the ring, and, you know, 2 weeks into it, he was, he was feuding with Sean Spears. If they couldn't do that to Jay White, who is a legitimate pro wrestling star, an international star of the game, why would we have expected Mariah May's debut to be anything different? And I know, look, some people are upset about it, but I'm like, What should they have done? Make the quarter hour about her? Our big international debut, Mariah May. Everyone's like, who the fuck is this? Who is she? No, we got a good match out of Red Velvet, an OG returning, Julia Hart, who is turning into a fan favorite right now. That was a perfect match. What do you do with Mariah May? I don't have the right answer. Maybe this wasn't ideal because she does come across as looking like a geek, but that's probably the role they have for her right now. So, okay. Probably not ideal, as I said, but I mean, they debuted Harley Cameron, you know, in short skirts and, you know, with the librarian glasses and the QTV shit. I didn't hear anyone lose their minds over that because that was also a shit debut when you think about it. Oh, this is how you're introducing Harley Cameron, huh? Yeah. You're not bringing in Julia. You're not bringing in, you know, Miko Satomura. You're not bringing in Mayu Iwatani. It's Mariah May. It's fine. I don't understand what the big to-do is. Other than, it wasn't great, don't get me wrong. And then the main event, Jay White defeated Mark Briscoe. Tremendous main event. Look, again, I got nothing to complain about the wrestling on this show. Nothing. I thought every match had something. Even if the opener sort of left me hungry, sort of left me a little disappointed, you know, when you order some Smash Burgers. You know, Smash Burger, I fucking love Smash Burgers. And then you have a couple of dips, you know, like you have a good, like a meaty dip, a nice, you know, like a, and then you have like the queso. And then maybe you have some fried onions. And you go into the meaty dip, you know, and you dip it, that's great, you know, and you do it, you dip it, you put some fried onions, and then you go for the queso, and the queso, you're like, the queso's next level, I'm so excited for the queso, this is what I'm ready for, and you go and you take a bite of the queso, and it's just not quite there, doesn't have any zing to it, doesn't have any zest, it's not, and you know, maybe if I do the onions add a little more, that's how I felt about the opener. The rest of the match was fantastic. The card was, wrestling goes, it's fantastic. But a tremendous match, a good pro wrestling match. No surprise here, because Mark Briscoe and Jay White are tremendous professional wrestlers. These are guys that I define, that define to me professional wrestling, that will go in there and will be pros. Jay White is so good at everything he does in a pro wrestling match. It's absurd. And Briscoe's tremendous too. Hard hitting, lots of big moves. You know, the wild Mark Briscoe style and the more calculated Jay White one. Froggy bows, fisherman busters, kiwi crushers. With, you know, everyone heard it at this point with Juice Robinson going, do the kiwi crusher, do it for Gato. Fantastic. Redneck Kung Fu but the Blade Runner gets the win. This is a guy who's protected, folks. This is a guy who's protected and who should... Anyway, we've went down there. Because, look, we've got the post-match to get into. Well, how am I doing on time? Oh, boy. I'm not getting this done in 2 minutes. I could, but MJF, his music hits, and of course, you know, like the bunch of, you know, shiny, you know, crows attracted to shiny things, people that pro wrestlers are, they turn to face the audience, to face the ramp, but then MJF comes out from behind. And wasn't it just last week that Jay White was directing traffic and was like, no, you guys look over there. Like, what happened to that Jay White? Anyway, doesn't matter. We know what happened. MJF cleans everyone's clocks with the Dynamite Diamond Ring. And they face off. Switchblade runs away. MJF cuts a promo in the ring. The lights go dark. And then we see people dressed in black attacking the Acclaimed. And they throw Anthony Bowens through a glass window. Was it real glass? Cry me a river. Is this a CM Punk reference? And then the Devil Mask guy glitches in and out again. Talked about that, and then MJF hits a powder. He was watching this backstage, and then he makes it to the backstage where he sees the Acclaim laid out, the carnage, and then Samoa Joe pops in and is like, you're running out of friends, pal. Now, this is all fine and dandy, but I could not have thought of a more WWE way to finish the show. Oh no, Warren Nunn again, shut the fuck up. Look, I told you. If you were to get triggered about this, don't listen to my show. Don't listen to the review. But I could not have imagined a more WWE way to finish the show than having a fake office be built up backstage with, you know, sugar glass or whatever the fuck they use. Stunt glass to throw a guy through. There's no office like that backstage and in, you know, the bowels of an arena. What are we doing here? This is 100% WWE stuff. And then the babyface standing over, looking at everyone down as we cut to black. What the fuck? Give me a Nitro Schmoz any week. And I know there's people who get annoyed. Oh, why do they always end like this? There's so many people and you never see what's going on. I much prefer the Nitro Brawl Schmoz to close the show. Tape machines are still rolling. I much prefer that to this. So, as I was saying from the start of this review, it is not a question. This episode, I don't think it's in question here, that this was meant to be a reset. That we were going to abandon all of these annoyances. As you can tell, the WWE fingerprints, the sports entertainment fingerprints, are still very prominent throughout this show. They're still there. And we're ending shows like we're ending them on Monday Night Raw. With an angle, someone, a stunt, you know, and all the questions that we usually have. Why is there an invisible camera there? Why didn't anyone warn anyone? Who hijacked the feed to put this on the Tonytron? All of this bullshit. All of this bullshit that has plagued the minds of pro wrestling fans for years is now seeping its way into AEW that has always steered clear of this. But now we're going deeper and deeper into this. And I talked about it, and we'll mention it again, when you have, when you hire WWE producers to come in and do your shit, this is what happens. When you hire the guy who was supposed to take the reins from Kevin Dunn in WWE, Mike Mansory, when you hire him to come and be like the co-producer of the show, this is the shit that happens. Because this is what they know. This is what they were taught. Oh, this is how pro wrestling goes. No, this is how WWE does things. I've never seen anyone get thrown through a glass window of a fake office in Ring of Honor, in New Japan Pro Wrestling, in All Japan, in fucking Pro Wrestling Noah. I've never seen it. This is what WWE does. Are you starting maybe to understand what I'm saying when I say we're inching closer to it? It's not this is how wrestling is. It's just how WWE has been doing things. And now everyone expects. Everyone says this is just pro wrestling. But no, this is just WWE. It's like when people tell me wrestling is in a better place ever since Vince took over and got rid of the territories and you know, bought out Vince. Made pro wrestling better. No, Vince made WWE better. There's a difference. This is why when AEW came out, when they were coming up, doing the grassroots promotion, getting the fans excited, they were saying, we're going to do things differently. We're bringing pro wrestling back. And we bought into it. And for a long while, it was true. But this is less and less the case. Ultimately, you may look at this and you're like, oh, Warren, Jesus, lighten up. It's just a spot and, you know, furthers a story and so on and so on. I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing what it was for, what the setup was for, what the end result is. I'm not disputing any of that. I'm disputing the fact that I am... raising awareness towards the fact that they are doing this shit now. That they are doing WWE style spots now. That the production is invested in this. Let's throw Adam Cole up onto a flat screen TV as he FaceTimes me. Like, come on. This is exactly what the other guys do. Invisible cameras hanging around. Where you have an action happening right here, like in this frame, but then the camera moves over and then, oh, suddenly there's a group of people here who are not involved in this frame here, but suddenly are involved just because the camera moved out of the way. Just panned over to something else. Those are all tropes from WWE. It's not how wrestling is. It's how WWE is. So when we say, when I say we and people like me, I'll focus on myself. When I say AEW is trying to do things like WWE, they are no longer making a case for being a true different alternative. This is the kind of stuff you point to. It's not just long extended promos. It's shit like this, which is so glaringly WWE. You don't see it elsewhere. You just see it in people who are like, well, we got to do what the market leader does or else no one will ever like us. And yet people really liked you when you were doing your own thing, AEW. You weren't scrambling to get 10,000 people into your pay-per-view shows, even as great as they are today. And for the record, in my opinion, if you want it, for what it's worth, Adam Cole is the devil. I mean, we've been seeing him on TV and on the monitor, you know, just a face talking directly into the camera. And what have we been seeing? Then suddenly the devil man appears, glitches in, and all we see is a face. It's Adam Cole. There are people, I'm reading people speculating that it could be CM Punk. And I don't know if it's satire. Like, because at this point, I would assume it's satire, but I don't know if it is. I don't know if people are being earnest in this speculation. Oh, it's, what if it's CM Punk? I'm going to stop watching if it's CM Punk. I'm like, Mike, I wish you get out of the fucking wrestling bubble. Jesus Christ. I don't know how anyone can earnestly be believing that it is CM Punk. If it is, I'll eat my words. But it's not. Doesn't make. Come on now. Come on, people. Grow up. Unless it's satire and they're getting me and I'm like, okay, but I honestly can't tell. I honestly can't tell if people are joking about it or not. There you go. So that's the Dynamite review. Look, if you like pro wrestling like I do, this, I have no faults in those regards. I think it's a good show. I have four star matches on this show. The women's match, 3.5 stars. I thought it was super strong. I liked it. MJF Dan Garcia was good. I guess expecting more, but other than that, the rest is hit and miss. And Samoa Joe dropping the title. Oh wow. Ah. There you have it. I mean, stuff happened on this show. What did I say at first? I liked the show, I didn't love it. Right? Yeah, I liked the show a lot. I can't say I loved it, but I really, really liked it. I thought it was a really good show. Sometimes you walk through the review and you're like, yeah, you know what? When AEW focuses on what it does best, which is pro wrestling, it's untouchable. It really is. And when it starts doing everything else, that's when it starts slipping. Anyway. We're going to leave it at that for now. 10 minutes over or so. Thank you very much for joining me here today for another review. Leave a like and a subscription here on YouTube. 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. 5-star ratings on Spotify. I will be back on Sunday for the Collision review. Thank you all for being here. See you next time.